Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome to Owl Post, your Harry Potter podcast, freshly delivered for you. I'm so excited to be here. I am just one of the hosts, the one, the only, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she is always, the fantastical, Treya Kaufman.
Hello!
How are you?
Good, I'm ready to get sorted. How about you?
Yeah, I feel like that's a good idea. You know, I'm wondering what house I'm going to be put in. As long as it's not Slytherin, it's probably going to be okay. But you know who did get sorted is some great people who gave us reviews on iTunes.
Woo! I sourced them into the house of awesome. I don't know if that's real, but I'm going to make it.
Yeah, it's a new house. We're just starting it at Hogwarts. It's brand new, the awesome house. But we want to thank DaisyDirt79 and Mr. 8-Bit. Both of them gave us 5-star reviews. Daisy Dirt, her tagline there at the top is just love, exclamation point. And then Mr. 8-Bit says, best Potter podcast ever. So, wow. Goodness. Thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate it.
I wish everyone could see me doing a little dance to those reviews.
Yes, nice. She looks just like Peeves right now, doing a...
Gee, thanks.
Yeah. actually, you kind of look like that dude in the movie during the fourth film when they have the weird sisters singing up there.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing that. Yeah. That kind of... There you go. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Well, thank you so much to everybody who's done that. Of course, you can find the show on iTunes under Owl Post. Follow their lead. Give us some star ratings and reviews. It does really help the show grow. Thank you so much to everybody who's done it. It means the world to us. And goodness, the more reviews we get, the bigger we'll be as a podcast, and more people will find us when they search in iTunes for Harry Potter Podcast. So, of course, if you'd like to send us any feedback on any of the shows that we get, we'd love to talk about that on the show. You can go to thenerdparty.com/contact, and if you choose Owl Post, you can send us a message. We're also on Twitter @joinnerdparty, and of course you can also find us on Facebook, which is a great place to talk about the shows, at facebook.com/thenerdparty. Well, Treya, I think it's time to get sorted and for us to just talk about chapter 7, The Sorting Hat.
Yes, I know that in past episodes, you had forgotten to mention one of your favorite parts that was really big in this chapter. So I want to make sure you bring up what the sorting hat does and what all the kids do and stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited. What I thought was really interesting is how the chapter just starts, and McGonagall kind of gives you the explanation of what the houses are and why they exist, and the fact that, you know, these houses are basically their family while they're here. And, you know, there's something to be said about sorting people into different houses, and that can be bad. But I think when we look all the way back, if we were, you know, watching the founders of Hogwarts come together, their idea is that, you know, it's best to play on people's strengths. And so that's why we'd sort them into these houses. And it's when all those strengths come together that basically they form, I guess, the Voltron, you know? like you bring all the houses together and you get the eagle or something. I don't know. Eagle!
They're like Transformers. They all become one giant Transformer.
Exactly. Something like that. But, you know, I think that's really interesting. And I also, I actually kind of like the way that this chapter starts of learning about these houses and, you know, what the houses represent. Because again, I think it's important to realize that we as people, you know, I don't know if I want to call it a lie, but, you know, really saying that you can do anything you want isn't necessarily true. I mean, we really can't. And that part of that is because we each have individual gifts, and some things we're going to be better at than others, and that the Sorting Hat and these houses take that into account to help the students hopefully achieve their greatest in their strongest fields. Obviously, we always need to learn things about, like, what we're not good at. But I was thinking about that, the pros and cons of splitting people up. And I like the way that I feel, and I think the way she does it here, it at least had the spirit of being good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so I think she's trying to create, like, an equal opportunity for everyone to succeed by not pitting someone who's really clever against someone who is maybe really courageous, right? Like, those are both super admirable traits that aren't necessarily equal. Like, they're not, you can't balance them against each other equally. Like, saying an apple is better than an orange. Well, no, they're different. They're both delicious and great for breakfast, but like, they aren't, you can't say, like, necessarily, you can say you prefer one over the other, but one's not better than the other. So I think that's all she's really trying to do, because the students interact overall in general, but I also feel like by dividing them into the things that they sort of have this natural affinity or talent for, you are able to challenge them more, right? So think about a kid who's really, really, really smart in a regular class at school isn't going to be as challenged as, say, a regular kid in school in a higher difficulty class, where it's going to challenge them more and the teacher is going to be able to identify that and challenge them more. So I feel like that's really what she's trying to do with this. And it's by allowing the Sorting Hat to do it, it removes any sort of, like, potential bias or, you know, that, oh, they put me in this house because they don't like me or whatever. So I really think it's interesting how much they honor the Sorting Hat and they're just like, whatever it says goes.
Yeah, that is fantastic. I think you're absolutely right. The idea of having, you know, all the knowledge and all the bits and bobs and pieces of who these founders were poured into the hat so it can make this decision. I think that's really fantastic. And like you said, it makes it an arbiter that doesn't have any bias. And that allows each of the students to feel comfortable, I think, with where they end up. And I really do. I think I really like that. And I like you for pointing that out, because I think that's really smart. And it seems like the founders were also really smart when they were thinking this up. You know, what's the way to basically have the schoolyard pick and make it as fair as possible? And really, I can't think of a better way to do it. You know, really, this is one of the coolest and fairest things that I've ever seen somebody come up with. So I really like it. I also think it's funny and interesting how much, and I'm really picking this up, but Harry is so fearful in this chapter and throughout the beginning of this book. He has so much fear, because, and he has so, the fear is one of not feeling like he's going to live up. I think he's already feeling the weight of the celebrity, and that he's like, but I'm no one, you know? And I like that, this whole idea where they are talking about what does it mean to get sorted? How do we get sorted? And Ron's like, well, I hear it's some kind of test. And Harry is just like, beside himself, inside his mind, a test.
Yeah, he freaks out.
Well, and I mean, goodness, I think I would be too, especially if I didn't know any magic and everybody's looking at me like I should. I also, there's this thing where we meet the ghosts for the first time, and I think that's really fun, the way that she kind of introduces them. I think it's really interesting because the friar is talking to some ghost. We don't get their name, but about how they should, you know, we should give Peeves a second chance. And there's like, they're giving all of us ghosts a bad name. Like, you'd think you'd be beyond that kind of stuff, being a ghost, but nope, apparently not.
Yeah. I think it's so funny because in the movie you get ghosts and they're kind of a surprise to us, but everybody in the movie seems to just sort of like, oh, it's fine. Like they all sort of just understand that like they're ghosts and they're a part of this universe. And then like in the book, that's not the case at all. Like everyone is super surprised. Even the kids that are from the Wizarding World are super shocked that these, like, I don't know, they just come in.
Apparitions or
yeah,
just,
they just show yeah. up.
It's such a bigger deal here. And we get more information. We obviously kind of get to see the friar and him talking and of course, Nearly Headless Nick. We learn about the Bloody Baron a little bit that, well, he legitimately has blood all over him, and Nick has never thought to ask why. I like that. In the hundreds of years that they've been floating around, the story never came up. Why are you covered in blood?
See, I didn't get the impression that he didn't ever think to ask. I got the impression that he just did not want to ask. Like that it was I don't really want to know the answer to that. So we just pretend like we don't notice.
Yeah, that's actually probably the case. And then we get the Sorting Hat song, which of course they always cut out of the films. And I do like that it's in the song where she explains what the different houses represent. I think that's really fun. And, you know, when I read the Ravenclaw that I am, is you're a real mind where those of wit and learning will always find their kind. I'm thinking to myself, man, I don't really think of myself as that smart. So,
well, but it's so funny because when I read that, I was like, oh my God, you're right. I surround myself with so many Ravenclaws and I don't even mean to do it. I was like, that is so true.
Yeah, I guess it's true. I guess smart people tend to attract other smart people. So that they, maybe that's why we're friends. That's maybe. Probably it.
That's yeah. probably it.
Yeah.
Well, we just make ourselves smarter that way.
Exactly. Exactly.
What actually really struck me as really interesting as I read this chapter and the next chapter that I hadn't really noticed. And I'm curious, I think I might go back and reread the first couple chapters, but this entire chapter, Harry compares everything to something of the Dursleys. Oh, it was so big. The Dursley's house could fit in the entrance hall. You know, the hat was so raggedy. The Dursleys would never let it in their house. Like everything was a comparison back to the world that he knew. And I'm going to be interested to see. I'm going to try to pay attention this time and see if it starts to sort of peter off as Hogwarts becomes more of his home and less the Dursleys is his home. Because even right now, that's still kind of his home. So I just thought it was really interesting. It just jumped out at me that every opportunity he had, he drew the comparison back to something he was comfortable and familiar with, and that sort of made him feel a little bit better.
Well, and that's a really interesting point because you also have with Harry at this point a person who hasn't really been anywhere. Like, that's really all he knows. I mean, you get the feeling like he goes to school and he comes home. That's all he knows, you know? So to him, life is very small. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden he's thrust into this world that is ginormous, you know, and all of his world could fit in the opening corridor.
Yeah,
of
in the
Hogwarts.
Entrance of this whole, just this one piece of this world.
Yes. Which I think you're absolutely right. That's a great pull. And it's interesting too, because that whole worry and thought process he even is thinking when he's worried about getting sorted, that, you know, he was always chosen last, you know, because all the Dudley's friends would be picking and nobody would pick him. And so he's so worried about what's going to happen to him getting sorted. And I think it's so interesting because, you know, he is watching all these other kids get sorted, and so they're all getting sorted. It's not really about who goes first or last, but you see that the life that he's had, it's had a pretty bad impact on him.
I mean, so much so he's afraid he's going to not even get sorted, that it's going to go on his head and they're going to be like, ha, this was a joke, go home. Like, that was his fear. And there are lots of like psychological studies out there that will talk about, you know, when you're in a place and you see somebody on a train, in a restaurant or something, And you're like, I swear that person looks just like fill in the blank. Someone from your childhood, someone from school, like someone you would never ever think of. Apparently that's a classic sign of being overwhelmed and like feeling fearful, like the fight or flight reaction. Part of how we help ourselves fight that is we look for things that are familiar and remind us of other things. So that's why we'll say something like, oh, this restaurant reminds me of my mom's cooking, or hey, this looks just like that place near my house, or hey, that person looks like someone I went to school with when I was, you know, 10. It's because we're helping to calm ourselves and make ourselves feel more comfortable. And just, he does that throughout this entire chapter. Everything is meant to make him feel more comfortable, and he has to psych himself out. The worst case scenario I could have is they could send me home. Okay, that would suck, but that's like the worst case scenario. But he does it throughout the entire chapter, is he has to make himself feel comfortable again because he does not feel like he belongs.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's interesting to watch the way that she's writing the character, because it connects with so many things that we feel throughout our lives. And everybody's felt like this before. I mean, you've probably been the person who's been picked last, and you've probably also been the person who gets to pick first, just depending on what group you're in. You've probably felt completely inadequate to any task that's going to be thrown at you, or totally fearful of the new place that you're in. And all of these things she just kind of puts on Harry and allows us to feel comfortable with him as a character. And I think what it does is it endears Harry to us so much so that we're going to trust him throughout the series, even though a lot of times what Harry thinks is right is actually going to be wrong. In fact, the only time that he's right is book 6, when nobody's listening to him.
And 7, at the very end of 7.
And
7.
And so those are the two times where, but, you know, 5 times in a row, she's going to get us with, oh no, Harry, everything you thought was right is wrong. But she does such a great job of, like I said, just kind of endearing the character to us that we do trust him and we keep following him. And so,
it brings you on like Team Harry, if you will. Like, mm-hmm. It brings you as an advocate to him. You're drawn, you want him to succeed. And even though he's wrong, you're like, oh, it's okay, Harry. I was wrong once too, or 5 times. I've been wrong 5 times. Don't worry.
No, exactly. Well, and I mean, Harry is just like us in the sense that, I mean, how many times have you thought you knew what was happening, or you thought you knew what was going on, and then you were completely wrong? I mean, it's just, again, it connects so well with our experience, and that's just kind of part of life and part of growing up, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing. So one of the things I wanted to ask you, especially in connection with everything we know that comes from, you know, the rest of the series, what do you think of this whole conversation between him and the Sorting Hat now as you read it?
I had a really hard time with that because the clip from the movie ran through my head the whole time. The Sorting Hat always felt, I can't even come up with a correct word for it. I don't want to say like slimy or like malicious, maybe is the word I'm looking for. It almost felt a little bit like that in the movie, like he was playing with Harry. And in this one, it felt less like that and more like an actual conversation. And it was the first time that you kind of understood that the Sorting Hat almost was alive and apart and was able to see what was in Harry's head. And, you know, it's interesting that the note about being great, because I actually think that the words for the Sorting Hat were slightly different in the movie. Most of them were the same, but I think I'm looking for the actual section here.
Yeah, in the movie, it's, you know, you could be great, you know.
Yeah, that's the part I'm thinking about.
And he does say that in the book too. He said, are you sure? You could be great, you know. It's all here in your head. And Slytherin will help you on your way to greatness. So it's very much the same. But I think part of it might be the voice work in the movie.
Yeah,
the voice work kind of makes him feel like a used car salesman.
Yeah, it does. It's like I don't even know. Like, it's just
swarmy.
Yeah. It feels like that. Like in the movie, you're kind of like, it's icky, but in the book, it doesn't feel that way at all. And it was hard to get that voice out of my head. I had to read it a couple times to push past that. In this case, it more just sounds like he's listing off. Okay. So talent should be Slytherin, bad mind. That's Ravenclaw. Courage would be Gryffindor. But like, thirst to prove yourself, that should be Slytherin. But like, it doesn't, he never, so first of all, Harry never registers as a Hufflepuff here at all, just to be clear.
That is very true.
There's no Hufflepuff in this. Which is funny because he's so kind. Because he's so kind and loyal. Like, you'd think mm-hmm. there'd be some ounce of Hufflepuff. He also says not Slytherin in his head in the book versus out loud like he does in the movie. Which, I mean, obviously you had to do because how else were you going to show it? I think I liked it better in the book than I did in the movie. It made me feel less uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It felt a little less invasive.
Less more like your mind's being probed.
Yeah. Less like the CIA is in my head and more yes. like I actually have a friend trying to help me out here.
Well, and what's interesting about it, obviously, is it's your second or third allusion to the fact that there's something about Harry that's connected with Voldemort. Inside yeah. him, you know, and I think that's what makes the conversation so much more interesting now is that you get a sense like that, you know, there's a thing about Harry, and as you start to read throughout the book, you'll continue to pick those things up, that there's something about him and, you know, this he who must not be named that seems somewhat connected, and she's dropping these little, you know, breadcrumbs throughout the series, and this is just happens to be one of the breadcrumbs. And again, it's such a momentous occasion for Harry that I think, you know, first time through, definitely missed it, you know, and now it's just one of those, it kind of seems almost like a duh, but, you know, it really is. It's just a breadcrumb.
Well, and I think it does help that we see pretty much every other kid get sorted as mm-hmm. well and see that it's like super fast. The hat goes on and it's like house. But with Harry, like the fact that it takes an extra moment and is kind of confused. It's almost like the hat already knows what everyone else doesn't know. And I think that's more impactful here in the book than it is in the movie. Because in the movie, they just blow through everyone so quickly that you have no idea. Like that him taking a second with the hat is different mm-hmm. than everybody else. I mean, right. You assume it is, but in the book, it's painted much more clear that like the hat had a hard time with Harry, and that should have been assigned to anybody. There's something going on.
And it's interesting because, you know, when you think about it, Ron mentions that the hat, or somebody mentioned somewhere, I think it's Ron, that it can take a while sometimes, but for the most part, I think you're absolutely right. And at least in the sorting that we get here, most of the kids just kind of get blown through very quickly. Like the hat, you know, they put it on and like immediately something comes out. What's most interesting is watching the other kids get sorted, because when you think about who Neville is, like, and you think about, because now you bring all this, you know, extra material back into this book if you've already read before, it's so interesting to think that the hat can see things in people that they can't necessarily see themselves, especially at this point, like a Neville or a Hermione or, you know, all of these people that end up in Gryffindor or in one of the other houses, but specifically Gryffindor. You know, when you think about Hermione, you would think that she would just be Ravenclaw. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, and I think we touched on this a little bit in the 602 Club discussion of this movie. And we talked about the sorting hat sort of sorting into what was best for each person and not only what mm-hmm. they were good at. Like, it knew Hermione was probably the smartest witch or wizard in this group, but they knew she wouldn't be challenged there. It knew that if putting her in Gryffindor, challenging her to be more courageous is what she needed to be successful and to make herself. And the same thing, it saw things inside people they didn't even see themselves. So it's really interesting to see the like illusion she paints with all of these people and the roles they're going to play. I mean, you get characters mentioned in here that you don't really get much in the movies, but we'll see more in the books, like Hannah Abbott and Blaise Zambini. And I mean, there's a couple of them that we'll come back to, and it now makes more sense, you know?
Yeah.
Even the Patil sisters are in here.
Yeah. Well, and that is something that I find kind of fascinating. It, like you were saying, especially with someone like Hermione, it's not just what you're good at, but it's also those latent tendencies that need to be brought out in you. It seems like that the Sorting Hat is very conscious of trying to do.
What's going to make you the most well-rounded.
Mm-hmm. And it is interesting too, because when you think about it, Hermione has the most courage of either of the boys by the end of the series. You know, she especially, I think, all the way to book 7, where, you know, she sticks by Harry's side no matter what. She never falters. She never thinks of, I mean, nothing in her brain ever thinks about leaving. And I think that's what makes Hermione so special. And again, it's something that the Sorting Hat sees here that you won't see for a very long time, you know? So I really, really like that.
It's the thing that is deep within her that we know she can do, but she just needs that extra, like, oomph to get out. You know, it's that thing that's going to shine brightest in her. I mean, she can be the smartest, but she's also like the most courageous of them, like you said. So it's going to capitalize on what makes her so unique. And I think it's so interesting that from the beginning, this hat sort of sets them up for that.
Yes. Well, and another place where I really liked you pulled the whole thought process behind the Dursleys is when the food shows up on the tables, and Harry is just astounded at what he is like seeing. And I really, really like that, because I think it's interesting too. He talks in his brain about how, you know, they never really, I mean, they didn't starve him, but it wasn't like they were, you know, treating him like Dudley, where he could have as much as he wanted. And again, it does a great job of just showing what Harry's life was like, and really how kind of god awful it was. I mean, we already got that picture a little bit, but I think getting it even more, it's just you feel so bad for the kid, and you realize, I think, in this part of the book, just how awesome it is for Harry to be at Hogwarts, this place that everything is awesome. Let's just put it in the Lego movie terms, you know?
You can't say that and not hear that song in your head anymore.
And it's absolutely true for Harry at this point, and I think that's what makes it so cool, that it really is the case for him that life is so much better right now than he ever thought possible. And that is, I think, I don't know. It was just something that jumped out at me as so crazy to think about.
Yeah. It's a very unique part that I don't think has the same impact on film as it does in the book.
It
sort of comes across. I mean, she does her best in the film, but not really like the most, I mean, because he gets that big look on his face like, it's Christmas. But it is, it's like, oh, it's Christmas, not, oh my god, this is the first time I've ever been able to eat what I want. So it's really interesting.
No, I absolutely love it. The other thing that I thought was really interesting too, Drea, and this kind of this was just an interesting conversation between the kids, is when they're talking about who's who in their families, you know, and what's what, like who's a muggle, who has, you know, and it almost caught me off guard the way that, and as we were talking about the last time, the subtle racism that comes through, and I guess it's not necessarily, I mean, it's, I don't even know if it's subtle, it's not even on purpose, it's just, it just is, you know, like, families want their kids, if they are witches and wizards, they want their kids to be them too. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, it's kind of like, oh, we got a dud.
Yeah.
That's almost how it feels.
Yeah. I don't even, this one comes across a little bit less like racism and more like maybe just open discrimination. Like, I think they're a little bit different. But in this one, yeah, are you talking about Neville and Neville's family?
Well, Neville's family and even the way in which, even the way in which Seamus's family, you know, yeah. It's kind of a nasty shock when he found out, you know, you can just hear his.
I love that accent. Part though. That line is one of my favorite from this whole, when he's just like, it was a nasty shock for him. I'm just like, I don't think of that as a bad thing. I more think of that as just like, yeah, crap.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That one always makes me giggle a little bit.
And it is funny. I mean, but what is interesting is to see how the wizarding world seems to look at if you're not a witch or a wizard, and your parents, you know, are. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of like a, oh, you got one of those, you know.
Yeah. Or like a fear that it's not going to happen. It's almost like a parallel to the Dursleys' fear mm-hmm. of being different. The
yes,
wizards are
exactly.
afraid that they're going to be different and that they're going to be normal. Or they're
right.
going to be, you know, muggle normal.
Yes.
Versus
great pull.
Versus like the Dursleys being worried about standing out. They're like, mm-hmm. no, we want you to fall out of this window and bounce down the street. Like,
for them, that's normal.
Yeah.
You know, so again, it becomes about this thing where it's, I don't, there isn't really another word than normal, but that's what it is. You know, it's the norm for their society. And, you know, if you're not the norm for their society, like, oh, you got the kid who can't do magic, you know? He needs to go to the school for kids who can't do magic good or read. So
well, and it's kind of our first introduction to the concept she introduces in the next book about like the squib, right? The part magic, part not magic character that we hear more about in the Chamber of Secrets. I feel like this is a little bit of our introduction to like making you understand what that's actually going to feel like for those mm-hmm. for those wizards next time, and how someone like Hagrid, who had been expelled and had his wand broken, like yes. why that actually is so significant mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. why Harry bonding with someone like that to everyone else in this community feels really, really wrong.
Yes.
But for Harry, he's like, I don't care. I don't know anything about that. I'm just going to be your friend because you're super kind to me and you're the first person I knew. You were the first face this face saw. So I think it's interesting.
And I think that is one of the reasons that Harry becomes, you know, so important throughout the series is he's the one who can see past the cultural biases that are there, and he breaks those biases and shows where they shouldn't be, you know, and maybe how they've also gone to hurt the wizarding world in some ways. Mm-hmm. And he does it so subtly. It's not like the in your face, like, oh, you guys are the worst. Look how bad you are. You know, it just, Harry's lifestyle becomes a representation of what everybody should do. You know, I put it this way. Harry becomes a good witness for the life that we should all live, you know?
He comes from such a place of being genuine. Like, mm-hmm. the intention of this acceptance that he has and the not understanding these biases aren't because he's trying to challenge the status quo. He's literally just coming from a place of very genuine feeling. And mm-hmm. that will always have a greater impact than something that carries an alternative message or carries some sort of alternative mm-hmm. ambitions. He just wants to be Harry. He just wants to go back to he wants to resolve all this so he can just be himself. Like,
right,
that's the whole point, and that's the, and people can hear that in what he says and see that in what he does, and that becomes so powerful that in breaking some of these biases that get created and overcoming some of these interplay racist tones and these dividing silos in these different worlds, that like that's so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that stood out to me kind of near the end was the whole idea that Percy talks about, you know, Dumbledore's decree, you can't go on the third floor corridor, and why, and him saying that Dumbledore normally will say a reason for that, that he will give a reason, and this time he doesn't. He thinks that's very strange. He didn't, of course, this is Percy, but he didn't even give it to the prefects, not that that matters, but to anyone, but the interesting part that there is a hint here that obviously there's something amiss with the third floor corridor, and hint, 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 you should pay attention.
Right. I found interesting that in this book or in this chapter, there's that Dumbledore is so this quirky old man. Like,
yeah,
he wants to say a few words and they're nitwit, blubber, oddment, and tweak. Thank you. Like, he just comes out sounding like a slightly crazy person, and I kind of dig it.
Well, and that is something that I think Michael Gambon picks up in the films and does well.
Yeah.
And that if he had been given more time, I think it's something Richard Harris would have gotten to do more of. But part of that too with Richard Harris is they actually cut out some of his
stuff.
His stuff. And so he didn't get to be as quirky anyway. So I agree with you. I love Dumbledore in this story, and I think he's just so funny. I like the fact that he also has them all sing the song.
Yeah, in their own tune.
Yes, exactly. And they all sing it, to their own tune. Like, I don't know how they all know the words, though. That's the thing that I was like, how in the world do you actually know the words to this song and sing it to a tune, but everybody sings it to their own. That was something that kind of boggled my mind and made me laugh all at the same time. It was really funny.
Yeah. This chapter resonates with me from the movie, not just for the sorting hat, but just for that announcement about the third floor and just mm-hmm. Harry's response to it in the movie. It just cracks me up because he seems to be the only person that seems slightly disturbed by it. And everyone else is like, oh, okay. And he's like, what kind of school is this? Like,
that what y'all keeping in there?
That just gets me every time.
I completely agree. And I really enjoyed this chapter and I enjoyed going through it again and picking up all of these things, because again, it's one of those places in where she just starts to drop little breadcrumbs. And of course, the biggest one at the very end where Harry's scar hurts.
Yeah.
When he sees Snape. And she obviously makes the mention of Quirrell sitting right next to him and his turban being turned around. And that causes him to have some awful nightmares that night where the Professor Quirrell's turban is telling him that he chose the wrong house. And I totally forgot that this existed.
Me too.
It's like it's like the spirit of Voldemort's telling him you chose wrong. How creepy is that?
It's even stronger to reiterate that connection between Harry and Voldemort now. Like, now you're like seeing the outcome and knowing everything that happened. You're like, oh,
No, absolutely. So a lot of fun to talk through this chapter. Anything else that stood out to you before we kind of wrap everything up?
No, just that he makes me really want to just like have legs that turn to lead to go to bed, because that sounded so comforting. Like, yes. To just be so full and tired that I was like, oh, I want to take a nap.
I hear you. Went to eat the other day and that's exactly how I felt. So I'm excited to continue on. And we've got so much coming here. We're really starting to get into the meat of the book, which is a lot of fun. And I can't wait to do that with you, Drea. And so before we go, though, just let everybody know where they can find you online if they would like to talk some Harry Potter.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman. It's Kaufman. And what about you, Matt? Where can they find you to talk about some Harry Potter?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well at MattRushing02. And I'm on the Instagram at MRushing. I'm on the Trek FM Network talking about The Orb with Chris Jones. That's about Deep Space Nine. And then I'm on the General Geek Show, the 602 Club, talking about all the other fandoms that we love. So if you just like geek stuff, that's the place for you to be hanging out. Also do Star Wars, a 602 Club collection, which is just all the Star Wars episodes. And you can find the Org, 602 Club, and Star Wars, a 602 Club collection on iTunes. I'm here on the Nerd Party Network with my good friend John Mills, where we are talking about Star Wars each and every week. And we just kind of pick a topic from that universe and just discuss it as you would with a friend sitting, you know, having a milkshake or a beer, or, you know, burger or whatever. You just talking about your favorite subject, and it's so much fun. So check out Aggressive Negotiations. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.